Good afternoon, I'm Kate Manahan. Thank you for joining me for the 234th edition of New Mainers Speak. This is a bi-weekly half-hour program where you can hear firsthand about the lives of some of Maine's immigrants. During the show, we visit with individuals regarding their life stories and enduring hopes as New Mainers. My guest today is Leila Hashi.
Yeah.
She was born in Somalia 23 years ago. Her family were refugees who moved to Boston when she was 4 and to Maine when she was 12. In May, Leila not only graduated from USM with a bachelor's degree in communications, she was also the commencement speaker for the class of 2020. Welcome to New Mainers Speak, Leila.
Thank you so much, Kate, for having me. Such an honor. I'm grateful for this opportunity.
It's so fun to see your shining face on the Zoom call. So you came to this country when you were a little girl and you heard stories of Somalia, but probably had very little memories of it yourself. But in 2016, you and your grandmother went back as U.S. citizens to Somalia for a visit. I wondered if you could describe the Somalia you found there.
Yeah. Like you said, Kate, I did go back in 2016. I was 20 years old when I went back to Somalia. At first, you know, just like anybody who I think who spends their life in America for majority of their life in America for a long time, I didn't know what to expect. You know, I had these thoughts in my head about Somalia, you know, due to like, you know, the influences from the media and just, you know, my own personal perception of Somalia. I thought it was going to be a very scary place to go to. And if I'm going to be quite honest, like, because I knew we were going to be there for an extended time, because I'm the one who ended up booking the ticket to Somalia. So I knew we were going to be there for about 6 months. So my first thought was, you know, I hope I make it back alive, you know, or like, you know, I hope I don't get kidnapped or held for ransom, you know, because in Somalia, when you're from America or you're from Europe, if you're part of that diaspora, it's very easy for other Somalis in Somalia to notice that. Just by the way you walk, people can tell you are not from the country. So my biggest, you know, fear was, oh my God, I hope I don't stick out. And oh my God, like, I hope I blend in as much as possible. So packing myself for Somalia, I took a lot of, you know, traditional Somali clothes. I took a lot of Islamic attires and stuff, you know, just so when I get there, as soon as I land in the airport, everything about me screams I'm from this country and I'm not from America. I didn't come to visit, you know? I remember like on the flight from Istanbul to Somalia, like it was like a 5-hour flight. It was like, we're 4 a.m. I woke up my grandmother and I told my grandmother, okay, I'm going to the bathroom now. I'm going to start changing. And I changed, you know, I had on jeans and a t-shirt that time on the flight, but I went into the bathroom. I ended up changing my clothes. I put on an abaya and all that stuff. Just so when I do get to the country, it's as smooth. I get through you know, the airport as smooth as possible, and I get to my family's house as smooth as possible. I got there, and the minute I got there, automatically, you know, I felt so out of place. And it's weird to say it out loud because, you know, this is my country. These are my people. They look like me. They talk like me. They speak the same language as me. Everything about them is so familiar to me because this is my identity. But I felt it was a shock to me. I felt like a foreigner in my own country. As soon as I landed there, it was 7 a.m. and it was scorching hot. As soon as I came off the flight, I was waiting to take off my abaya because that's how hot it was. I'm not used to wearing abaya in like 120 degrees, you know, so I had to take off my regular Somali attires. I was rushing to get home. We went through security and my Somali, you know, because I grew up in America, my Somali isn't as, you know, as good as it should be. When I speak, a lot of people can tell that I grew up in the States because my Somali isn't as dense and the words aren't as, you know, emphasized as they should be. So my first challenge was speaking to the officer at the airport. That was my first challenge, and telling him that we don't want our passport stamped. We're good. We're here for 3 months tops. And my grandmother bought so many bags to Africa, so many bags to Somalia. She was bringing so many gifts for so many people. You know, when you're coming from the States, you're coming to this war-torn country, people are expecting things from you. You know, you're like, people look at America and they see, like, you know, the American dream. This is where all your dreams, and this is where there's so much endless possibilities and opportunities. So if you go there empty-handed, you're basically slapping these people in the faces because they have nothing here. You're coming from a place with everything. You have to bring them something, you know?
What kinds of things were in the bags?
Yeah, we had, oh my God, we had electronics. Like, that's like the go-to now. Everybody wants electronics. We had iPhones, and we bought iPads for family members. We had, we had female hygiene. Like, we had things for female hygiene because my grandma and I, we were going to the countryside, and I knew that my cousins in the country, they didn't have many things that, you know, that are for females, like tampons and pads. Those things are not really that important, but they're a necessity out there. Those are things that are needed out there. So I packed things. I had like what, a couple of things for me, but most of the things for my cousins, you know, for my female cousins as a woman, you know, like bras, these things that are they're essential. And they're not really out there like that because they live in the countryside. I mean, in the city, you can find these things in Mogadishu. That's the city. When you go deep into the countryside, these things start to become a luxury, you know? So I had these things packed. My grandma bought things from America. She bought, oh my God, she bought like little items like an iron. Like, that's the things that, you know, we all together, we had 12 bags. Imagine going through security with 12 bags, 12 bags, my grandmother and I. It was crazy. Like, checking the bags in was a hassle. And then getting off the plane in Somalia, making sure all the bags were there. We stuck out. In the airport, we stuck out because people knew these people have a lot of bags. Like, these people are not from the country. Like, usually nobody brings this much bag unless they're bringing it for people. I'm over here like, okay, Leila, try to blend in as easy as possible. But then there's all these bags they're going against me. So we went there. It was so amazing, the whole experience. Once we got there, we got to the house. You know, when we got there, it was morning prayer. And, you know, here in America, you know, America is like a melting pot of many religions and many cultures. So, you know, you don't really hear the call to morning prayer. But we got there at the airport, I heard the call to morning prayer. And I have never heard the call to morning prayer unless I was physically in a mosque. That's when I heard the call to prayer. But being at the airport and hearing the whole city, like everybody is getting ready to pray the morning prayer, that's one of the biggest shocker, is hearing that morning call to prayer. That's when I was in my country. It was a Muslim country. Everybody was like the same religion. That's when it like really hit me, like, okay, I'm not in America no more. I went through, everything was fine. We got to the house. Everybody was so welcoming. The fruits were so fresh because everything, you know, you get your milk that morning. You know, that morning you get your milk. That you go to the market and it's the fresh milk, the fresh meat. You have the fresh produce. You have exotic tropical fruits that you don't find here in America. You know, the mangoes are so juicy. It's different. You know, over here you go to the supermarket and you know you're promise these organic things, but it doesn't taste as juicy. You know, the meats were so fresh, the chicken was so amazing. You go into the city and I just, everybody's busy, everybody's rushing, everybody doing their own things. And you know, for some, you know, Somalia is not, you know, it's not a built country, but oh my God, does it have a structure? Just the traffic itself, there's no traffic lights, but it's still structured. It has its own structure. Everybody knows what they're doing. Everybody's hustling. They're doing their own thing. You have taxi drivers asking me, you know, where do you want to go? Trying to negotiate with you. You're going to the nearest, you know, shop and people are negotiating. It's like you can see the structure. You can feel it. And it was so amazing. It was breathtaking. after being in the city for a couple of weeks, my grandma and I ventured out into the countryside, and that's when I really got to experience some time to myself. You know, being in the city, it's like everything is so fast-paced, you know, everybody's always in your face and stuff, but being in the countryside, I went to where my grandmother was born. I went to where my grandmother grew up. You know, I got to see the place that my grandmother learned how to, you know, how to have a nomadic life. Like, this is where she learned how to be on her own. This is where she learned how to be a provider, how to be a nurturer. I was in my grandmother's, you know, I was in my grandmother's life at that moment. I was so amazing. It was a house, you know, it was a house. But when my grandmother lived there, it wasn't a house then. You know, back then it was like a little hut, you know, but now my grandmother, you know, she was able to build a house there. And the plumbing, there was no plumbing, you know. If you wanted to go to the bathroom, you had to walk a little bit far, you know. There was no electricity. So I was disconnected from the world. I didn't have a way to contact people. If I wanted to call somebody, I had to walk a while to get to the nearest call station. And then when I got there, I just used one of the phones there to contact people in the city, you know. But it was nice. Like, I got around the nighttime. I used a lantern. There was no electricity, so there was really no reason, you know. And we were cooking food on coal. I've never cooked food. I'm used to like gas stoves or electric stoves. And in Mogadishu, we had an electric stove, like, you know. And Mogadishu was nice, but in the countryside, we bought wood and coal together, and that's how we started the fire to make food every night. And, you know, eating there like three times a day is a luxury. You know, I wasn't eating three times a day. I was eating one time a day. And if I wanted anything throughout the day, you know, I would have food that were in containers. There was no fridge. So the food wasn't cold. You know, like when I was drinking the water, it wasn't cold down running down my throat. It was pretty warm water, you know. It was surreal. It was a shocker, but it was amazing. And looking back, seeing it, I saw the luxury that I have in America, and the things that I took for granted in America, like tap water, you know, cold water coming out of the tap. I didn't have that in Somalia. Just being able to put on shoes and know that, you know, when I step outside, like, my feet don't get burned by the sun because I have proper shoes on. In Somalia, you can have proper shoes. When you step outside, your feet will burn because the sun is so hot. So you have to get around wearing sandals. And when you wear sandals, your feet are still getting burned regardless. So it was so surreal, but it was such an amazing experience, and I needed it at that age.
I bet it informed a lot. Where in the countryside were you?
So my grandmother, she grew up in Galkayo, which is like 2-hour flight from Mogadishu. Galkayo is a different city, and Galkayo is usually where my grandmother's like people are from. And it's a city, but within Galkayo, if you go a little bit on the outskirts of Galkayo, you get to the countryside of Galkayo. I know, like, when you got to Galkayo, you have to get off the flight, take a bus. The bus drives like 2 hours, and then it drops you off. The thing about it is, the bus drops you off at a certain location, and then you have to walk to the place because the bus doesn't go further than that. My grandma's an old woman. My grandma, when we were going to Somalia, my grandma, she was 90 years old. Now my grandma's 94. We had to find a way to get to our location, and we had to ask one of the people, like, can you get somebody, please bring a taxi, meet us there, just drive us there a little bit, just get us a little bit further. And it did, thank God. They were willing to take us all the way close to my grandmother's house, which was nice.
What was that like for her? Did she want to come back after all that time?
Oh, yes. My grandmother was dying to go back to Somalia for a long, long time. I remember in like 2009, 2008, living in Boston, my grandma's like, I'm ready to go back. Like, I miss my home. I miss my place, you know. And for her, like, that's the life that she knows. You know, my grandmother, she's 94 now. She's very active still. My grandmother does her own thing. She walks around. My grandmother, you know, she understands the value of her legs. And that's why my grandma, she's not the type of person to sit down for a long time. And now she's getting old, and old age is coming upon her. So now she's really dying to go back. But she wants to go back. And the plan is for me to take her to Somalia again the end of this year. And she's not going to come back to America after that. She's done, you know. My grandmother, she left Somalia a long time ago. My grandmother, she used she used to do import and export from Saudi Arabia to Somalia with my grandfather. So she never really got to sit down in Somalia and experience it, and she never got to go back to her, you know, to the place that she was raised, the place she grew up. So that's one of those things now that she yearns for so much. And my grandma, she always says this thing, you know, the older you get, the more you go backwards. You know, the older she's getting, the more she wants to go back to that childhood life that she had. And, you know, now she's like, now, Layla, you're getting older, and the more you want to experience new things, the more you want to try new things. But trust me, she said, she's like, when you reach a certain age, you want to go back to doing the things you used to do when you were younger. You know, and she says, the older you get, the more you turn into a baby. It's like a full circle life. That's what my grandma always says. And now she wants to go back and never come back. And I want that for her. I want that life where she, you know, where it's peaceful. One of my grandma's biggest fears is like dying here in the States, because she doesn't want to be buried in American soil. She'd rather be buried in Somali soil, the place where, you know, everything she knows, everything she learned was there. You know, my grandma, she got an education in Somalia, not even in America. So
yeah, and returning to the land that she came from.
Yeah.
While you were there, you met your 17-year-old cousin who happened to already be married with 3 children. And I imagine looking into her eyes and looking into her life stirred up a lot for you. What was that like?
In that moment, at that time, I felt little. I felt little because I was 3 years older than her, and here she was, already experiencing things that, quote unquote, I was supposed to be already have experienced. And standing in front of her, I felt little. But looking at her and seeing the life that she made for herself and the life that I had, I felt big, because I had opportunities that I don't think you could even ever dream of.
Yeah. You know, I wonder what it's like for her to see you blow into town.
I wonder that too, you know, Kate, because it's so normalized in Somalia for a girl to have a family and to start, you know, being a woman at a young age. When I saw her, she was happy with herself. And, you know, in America, we have this mentality that, you know, you're 18, you're still kind of young, you know, you just turn an adult, you know, you're starting your life and stuff. You know, the idea of having a family and the idea of being a woman in America at 18, it isn't pressured, you know? You don't feel things from society because you're just getting out of high school, you know, you're just turning an adult. But in Somalia, you know, the mentality of, you know, when you become a woman, when you get your period, you are a woman. That's when your life begins. But girls, you know, like, get their menstrual periods 11, 12, you know, that, like, that's when you start to become a woman. So in America, you have this mentality where even though, you know, you're getting your period at 11, 12, you're still young. You're, you know, when you turn 18, you're an adult. But in Somalia, it's really different. And when I saw my cousin and she had 3 kids at 17, in a way, if I'm going to be honest, a part of me felt relieved. I was like, thank God, I can't bear to have kids. I can't think of the response. That's so much responsibility. I cannot think of that. I know if I were to have a child right now, I'm not ready for it. That's because of where I grew up, you know? If not, I wasn't pressured to become a mom at a young age. So yeah. I felt unprepared.
It's both your home and a totally different world to you.
Yeah. I felt like a stranger amongst my own people. I'll never forget that.
If you're just joining this conversation, welcome. You're listening to New Mainers Speak. I'm Kate Manahan, and my guest today is Layla Hashi. Layla, you're kind of famous at USM for being the 2020 commencement speaker, and people can hear that whole wonderful speech online. I actually learned about you through your collection of interviews on the podcast Refugees of Portland. I wondered if you can tell us a little bit about your relationship with WMPG and what you were hoping for when you started your podcast.
Yes. So I'm actually sad that I heard about WMPG my senior year of college. I wish I'd I heard about them a couple years earlier, because there's so many things I would have done with WMPG. WMPG became my home in such a short time. I felt like I found the things I wanted to do with my career because of the opportunity and the resources I found at WMPG. So I'm always grateful and so thankful at my time at WMPG, and hopefully I can't wait to do more things with them in the future. My podcast, Refugees of Portland, well, actually started in a class I was taking, Intro to Social Media. And I had this teacher, and she wanted us to do a project for the semester. And the project, she wanted it to be something you collected throughout the semester, and you showed it as at the end of the semester. And I didn't know what I wanted to do. I thought maybe I wanted to, like, you know, do something that had to do with fashion, I know I wanted to be different, and I knew I wanted to bring visibility to something that doesn't usually get visibility. So I was thinking maybe I should do something with my culture, you know, show a little bit of my identity, you know. But then the more I thought about it, the more I was like, let me step away from me, you know, like, I can bring visibility to my identity at any time, you know. It's not that hard to shed some light on who I am and what I do. It's really simple. Let me focus on the people who don't get the opportunity or don't get the chance for there to be some sort of visibility on them. So I thought about it. And then I remembered when I was studying abroad, January of 2019, I read, because I love keeping up with, you know, main news, local news and stuff like that. I heard about the surges of immigrants coming to Portland. And I heard about the new Mainers coming, and I heard about them occupying the Expo Center, and I heard about the lack of beds for them. And I heard about just how, you know, how Maine lacked resources in trying to provide homes for these new Mainers. And I was thinking, my God, we have such a big opportunity here to talk to these new Mainers, because a lot of these new Mainers, some of them had lives before that. You know, whenever I think about that, I always think of my own family members. You know, I have people in my family who used to be doctors, who used to be, you know, teachers in Somalia. And just because they got an education in Somalia, you know, it means nothing here in the States, and they have to start over. You know, a lot of my cousins, a lot of my, you know, older cousins who had careers and who had lives in Somalia, they don't have that in America now. Now they work 9-to-5 jobs, and in Somalia they have, you know, massive careers. So I was like, you know, let me bring visibility on the new Mainers. Even though they're new Mainers, they had lives before us. So that's what I did.
I love that you have them speak in their native languages as well. That's kind of a trend in audio these days. It's okay for the listener to not follow every word, but they're not hard to listen to. It's very pleasant, because it's not all in foreign languages.
Yeah, and I think that's the biggest thing. I know whenever I speak in my language, I know it's part of my identity. I love speaking my language. Whenever I speak in my language, I feel connected to my culture, to my roots, to my ancestors. So I didn't want to take that away from anybody else, because I understand the value of speaking in your own language. So when I was speaking to my guests, I let them know beforehand, you know, a lot of them, they spoke English. Like, English is a major language in the world. I told them, hey, like, understand, you know, don't feel pressured to speak in English, because at the end of the day, you know, people who hear you, you know, they should be able to understand what you're saying by the tone of your voice, you know? And I told them, like, I will step in the middle and I'll explain to people what you're talking about, but trust and believe me, I will never try to tell your story, because that's for you to tell. I will give a description however you feel comfortable. I let them pick the location where they wanted to. A lot of them some of the interviews I did it from their own homes. I sat down with them, I had tea with them, I got comfortable with them, you know, and I tried to let them know that I myself, I'm also a new Mainer in a way. Even though I've been here for such a long time, trust me, like, I still feel like an outsider sometimes. So don't worry, you know? And just because, you know, you're new and stuff, that shouldn't stop you from being able to tell your stories. And that shouldn't stop you from going out and getting what everybody else over here is already entitled to. So why not? And it was nice. I got to meet their kids. Some of my guests, I got to play with their kids. Some of my guests, I spent the entire day with them. It was amazing. I felt like I was part of them, a part of their family.
That was an amazing project, and it makes sense for a journalism major to use the skills you've been learning in class and apply them, your ethical approach to the interviews. And now you're doing more. This summer, you're making a series of visual podcasts for Umjumbo Africa. I guess you should let us know what Umjumbo Africa is and maybe what to expect from your upcoming project.
Yeah, Umjumbo Africa is a nonprofit newspaper that focuses on being a voice for minorities and Africans in America, Africans in Maine. They're great when it comes to being a resource for the community. They offer things in many different languages. I met when the whole COVID-19 situation was going on, the pandemic started, and Umjumbo Africa was one of the first resources to provide different languages for people to get a full grip of what was going on around the world. They did a wonderful job executing that. They also, they're also about, you know, letting minorities have the resources to become a little bit more independent and do things for themselves. I love the whole idea and the whole mission that, and the whole vision that Umjumbo Africa has. That's one of my main things as a journalist, is I really want to work for like a nonprofit newspaper or a nonprofit organization and help them exceed their mission and their visions. And, you know, when it comes to minorities, that's one thing I really, like, I'm so passionate about, is bringing light and bringing an understanding and accountability to minorities through storytelling and sharing their stories and being there for them, and just letting them know, like, you know, just because you're new, that doesn't mean that, you know, you're less qualified for things, because people who were born here have that opportunity. Yeah, you're new, but don't be afraid to go out and do the things that people who are born here do. And I think that's the stigma that comes with being a new immigrant, is you feel scared because sometimes you feel as though you're not entitled to things because you're not born in this country. But a lot of people, they don't understand, you know, you can the dreams that you want, they're attainable. It doesn't matter if you're an immigrant, it doesn't matter if you're a citizen. And that's one thing I want to step away. Even for my grandmother, sometimes my grandmother was shocked when I told her that I was the commencement speaker for my graduation, because she was like, oh, how can a black Muslim female be the commencement speaker? Isn't that position for people who are white, you know? And I told her, no, grandmother, it's not. Anybody can become the commencement speaker. You just have to put yourself out there. So my grandmother has this mentality. So imagine how many other people feel as though they're less deserving of things just because they're immigrants, or just because they're black, just because they're Muslim, just because, you know, they're attracted to this, they're the same gender. So it's like, you have to step away from these things. You have to step away from these societal roles that we're all, you know, pressured to fulfill.
You end up being a voice for the voiceless. And that's part of your part of your career goal. In a couple sentences, can you tell me, like, if everything goes perfectly over the next 5 or 10 years, where are we going to find you as a journalist?
Oh, wow. Definitely CNN. I want to be on CNN. Definitely, I want to be on CNN. I want to be like the Anderson Cooper for like minority girls. I want to be the Don Lemon for black people. I want to be on primetime TV with my hijab as a Muslim woman, talking about what's going on in America, being the one that breaks stories. I want to normalize that being a black Muslim journalist is fine, and being on primetime TV with such a big network like CNN is you can do it. You can accomplish it. So 5 to 10 years, that's my dream, CNN.
Oh, Layla, you are a bright force in the world with an interest in justice and understanding that your voice really actually matters. I wish you all the best as you embark on your career in journalism, and can't wait to watch you on CNN.
Thank you. Hopefully, in Islam, we say inshallah, which means if God is willing. If God is willing, and if that's what's written for me, inshallah, that will be it.
Thank you for being my guest today, and thank you all for listening. I'm Kate Manahan, closing today's program with a song that Layla has selected for us. Can you tell us what the name of your song is and why you chose it?
Yes. Well, the name of my song is called Baby. It's by a Somali artist. His name is Harir Ahmed, and a featuring a Somali female artist. Her name is Miss His. The reason I chose this song is I'm away from my family right now. I'm only in Ireland. And back when I was in the States during my commencement, like during those months and stuff, this was the song that everybody in my family used to sing. And we all used to like dance to and sing out loud to and play in the car. So every time I'm feeling, you know, homesick, this is a song that I listen to. And it brings me happy memories. That's why I chose the song.
Thank you.
No problem.
So that was great. You're amazing. I can't wait till you're on CNN. Yeah, we're done.
I can too, hopefully.
Oh my gosh, Leila, you're so comfortable and easy, and you have a lot of content in all that. You're not just blowing air. You're covering some serious bases. It's fun to get to
thank see you.
I'm sorry it's not in person. That would be even more fun, but this is pretty terrific.
I think we're making the best out of what we have, so I'm really, really thankful for this opportunity. Thank you so much, Kate.
Do you know, I wanted to just convey to you, when I was talking to Abdi Iftin, he said, I asked him if he knew you, and he said, oh, she was the commencement speaker. She's amazing. And he went on and on. So you have fans in the community.
Oh, I gotta reach out to him now. Now I'll reach out to him and be like, hey, do you remember me?
Yeah, he does. And you should, because the two of you together, what a force.
Thank you so much. I definitely will. Sometimes, you know, Kate, sometimes I get shocked. I shared my commencement speech on LinkedIn just to get more more revenue and more activities on my LinkedIn, and it has almost 5,000 views.
Wow.
And people are coming to my inbox, and I'm getting left and right. People are like congratulating me and stuff, and I'm like, okay, this should help me find a job in a way.
Really, I mean, it says a lot about you, right? That you're willing to put yourself out there, and also you're skilled at doing it. Say, I saw when I Googled you that you had a lawsuit a few years ago, and I wondered if that ever wrapped up.
Oh, no, I ended up dropping it because it just got so complicated, and I went away to Somalia, and I was gone for, I was supposed to be in Somalia for 6 months. I ended up being in Somalia for 9 months, and then it just, the timing with the lawyer wasn't off and stuff, so I ended up dropping it. But I was in a really I was in a really shitty job with a really shitty manager who did not like, I guess he didn't like Somali Muslim girls. I don't know. He was just, yeah, I wasn't, but I ended
What's
up dropping it.
Like?
And I don't know. He was just a really, really like rude guy, but I ended up dropping it. It was taking too much of my time, and it was just like prolonging. And I didn't know how long the legal battle would be. But I ended up dropping it, and I thank God I did, because I think till now I would probably have been stuck on to me, and I wouldn't have been able to venture off and do the things I did. Because when I was in Somalia, my lawyer was trying to email me, but the connection was so bad, and I was in the countryside for such a long time, and he didn't like the fact that I wasn't applying back, and I couldn't move on with my life and do the things I wanted to do with this, like, with this legal case still going on.
Yeah.
So the best choice was just to drop it. I let it go. I have no malice, nothing towards, you know, errands or anything like that. And I wish them the best. And
it's a good, you know, you kind of flexed your muscle though too, and said, you can't talk like that.
Yeah.
And that's good. Even if nothing else happens, they get publicly humiliated for being racist, and that's good.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, like, one thing that did come out of it before I went to Somalia is one thing I really wanted to know, for nobody to ever be treated the way I was treated. So one thing I did let my lawyer know, to let their lawyer know that needed to happen, is they changed everything when it comes to their trainings. Now they're so focused on when it comes to like sexual harassment, when it comes to discrimination. So they changed their whole training. And I'm so happy that I did that, because I'm happy now, like, another female works there, because I was dehumanized in my position as a female. And I'm so happy, like, now if another female ever does work there, now that their training is much better. When I tell you, Kate, they had different training videos. They brought in professional people to talk to staff members and tell them, this is what's acceptable, this is what's not acceptable. The fact that I was able to do that thing, and even though it's such a tiny thing for them, because they're such a, you know, million-dollar corporation, it's such a big thing for females, because I hope no other female is ever treated the way I was treated.
I think that's amazing. So while your cousin was being a mother and raising children with all those responsibilities, you were also doing things at a, what, 17-year-old or something like that, and making a real difference in the world for a lot of people in the future. So, yay! Yeah. Kudos to you.
Thank you.
Well, I hope you have a lovely evening in Ireland. Is it nice there today?
It's rainy all the time. Tomorrow's supposed to be good. So tomorrow, me and my cousin are. Do you know Hoth Mount, Hoth Cliff? It's like Hoth Cliff. It's called Mohair Cliffs. The cliffs of Ireland. It's
Nice.
Mohair Cliffs. Yeah. Hoth and Mohair are like the big like destination you go see. It's like 3 hours to drive there. So my cousin and I are about to drive there tomorrow, and I'm super excited.
Oh, good. Down on the Dingle Peninsula, I think.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. I drove down there and it was socked in with fog. I didn't see one thing. We drove around the peninsula because we had already signed up. So they drove us. It was the dumbest thing because it was like looking at a white sheet the whole way.
Yeah. It's rainy all the time here, but I kind of like it. It's not my favorite weather, to be honest.
Yeah. Well, hope it's a thrilling time there and you get all this time with your family, and I'm sure they're psyched to have you around. You're fun to be with.
Oh, thank you. I hope you have a good rest of your afternoon. Bye, Kate.
Thanks. Bye, Layla. Why doesn't it feel like I can hear anything?